Welcome to Mazer's Musings, the podcast.
This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series. Bryant makes the play. It's over. And the Cubs have finally won it all. 8-7-10.
Oh, man. I knew he was fast. I knew how to get rid of it. It's wet out here. The longest game ever. Oh, my. That's one of the best games anybody will ever see. I've never won an award as a team. I've always been able to do it individually, but this trumps everything. I mean, I'm out here crying, man. I'm so happy. I mean, I can't even really put into words how this feels.
It happened. It happened. Chicago, it happened. That's it. We're world champions. I can't believe it.
Don't ever permit the pressure to exceed the pleasure. Don't ever permit the pressure to exceed the pleasure.
This is Mazer's Musings, the podcast. Here's your host, Andy Mazer.
That is still absolutely fantastic to hear. The audio courtesy of Fox Sports as the Cubs wrapped up the 2016 World Series Championship, ending the long, long 108-year history of no championships here on the north side of Chicago. Well, it's been a long time. Welcome back into Mazer's Musings, the podcast. I'm glad to have you with me here. I do appreciate you joining me here. And the hiatus has been almost a year. And I don't know I don't know if when I really started this podcast, I realized how much work it was going to be. So I kind of wimped out for a little bit, but I'm back and hopefully going strong here for the rest of this year, at least for the baseball season. Try to tap into some of the network that I have established over my 20 years in Major League Baseball to get you some good guests and some interesting content here on Mazer's Musings, the podcast. Again, we're available at the iTunes stores as well. Just check us out and search the name so you can subscribe and not miss an episode and listen to it whenever you feel you can. So I guess a quick backup here on what went down here last year. And we're going to talk to Scott Miller of the Bleacher Report here in just a few moments as well. He's going to join us and talk a little baseball. This is the guy that covers the sport from top to bottom, both leagues, all the divisions. Actually had a one-on-one with Commissioner Rob Manfred that he's going to tell us a little bit about as well. And he's also really big into music. But, you know, when we last talked, it was April of 2016, and the Cubs gotten off to an 8-1 start, and nobody thought, well, this team is going to be invincible all year long. But, boy, we were all wrong. With the exception of one little speed bump toward the All-Star break where they lost again a bunch of games in a row, and I think Anthony Rizzo kind of pointed to the Sunday game just before the All-Star break in Pittsburgh as a huge win for the team because it got them back feeling good about themselves, getting ready to attack the second half of the season. And to kind of think where they came from last year in several playoff series and how close it was to being an absolute disaster. I mean, you can even look at the Giants series. They have to rally in the ninth inning, or they face Johnny Cueto in a winner-go-home situation at Wrigley Field. They're down to the Dodgers. They come back, and they beat the Dodgers. We all know they're down 3-1 to the Indians, forced Game 7, and in an epic Game 7, won the whole thing and set Chicago really on its ear and on its head because of the celebration that I think is still going on. But it's amazing to see what this team was able to do and the confidence that it had in itself from the very beginning. Even going back to 2015 when they were swept out of the National League Championship Series by the New York Mets, the target was on their backs. And then, you know, Joe Maddon said, hey, embrace the target. That was the championship cry for 2016. This year it's that's Cub, as in to say they've established a new way of doing things on the north side. So it'll be an interesting season, I think. I still think, in my mind, looking at some of the numbers and some of the moves that were made in the offseason by several teams, not only in the National League but in the American League, we could very well see another Cubs-Indians World Series. And I say that, you know, half as a fan and half as a student of the game and more on the non-partial side of things. But, you know, you look at the Cubs and the way things have fallen. I mean, yeah, they did lose a pretty big member of last year's team, and even in 2015 in Dexter Fowler. He goes to the rival St. Louis Cardinals. But, you know, you gain so much when you get Wade Davis in a trade for Jorge Soler from the Royals. And, you know, another year of Kyle Hendricks, another year of Mike Montgomery. And now let's see about how they can develop a guy like Albert Almora Jr. You got Ian Happ in the background a little bit there, waiting to get his chance. You got Kyle Schwarber hopefully, knock on wood, healthy for a full season, at least be able to start this season. So there's a lot of good problems to have if you're Joe Maddon on the north side of Chicago. Now, if you look at the Indians and what they were able to do, missing their left fielder most of the year last year, Michael Brantley, they were losing. They missed two of their everyday starting pitchers. Were barely able to contribute at all during the last part of the season and also into the playoffs. So Terry Francona doing a masterful job in getting his team to do what it did last year. But now they add Edward Encarnacion and his 42 home runs and over 120 runs batted in for the Toronto Blue Jays. They get him on a free agent contract. They'll put him in as the DH every day. So that'll certainly be something formidable to look at as far as the American League is concerned. Same thing with the Boston Red Sox adding Chris Sale. And now they get Pablo Sandoval back from a tough injury, and apparently he's slimmed down. We'll hear more about that from Scott Miller coming up in a moment as well. But, you know, you got to think that Craig Kimbrell is going to bounce back from a subpar season. And then they got that outfield of Benintendi, the rookie who could win Rookie of the Year. You got Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr. You've got all sorts of offensive weapons as far as the Red Sox are concerned too. So hard to obviously predict what you might see toward the end of the year. But if you read my blog at all at Mazer's Musings at andy-mazer.blogspot.com, I picked the Cubs and the Red Sox. I like the fairy tale of that matchup, to be honest with you. And I picked also that the Cubs would win the World Series back-to-back years. They'd win it in seven games again. This time, though, it would be at home because I have such faith in the National League that they're going to win the All-Star game finally this year that the Cubs will have the home field advantage in the World Series and be able to bring it home. So, again, just some really quick observations as far as what the baseball season ahead might look like and how we look at it. But, again, we'll get more into depth with that with Scott Miller, who's an old friend. He's not old, but he's a friend of mine, and we've been friends for a long time. Met him actually even before I went out to San Diego, where he's basically based. And I've had him on a couple of my radio shows on WGN Radio and a couple of other stops that I've made along the way. And it's a great baseball guy. He knows the game, and he's been around it for a long time. And as I mentioned, he had a chance to sit down with Commissioner Rob Manfred. We're going to get into that and get his ideas and thoughts about the division races and maybe the most improved type of teams and maybe those that have taken a little bit of a step back as well. So we'll get into all that and more. With Scott Miller, we'll take a quick break and be back.
Mazer's Musings, the podcast, will return in a moment.
Back on Mazer's Musing, the podcast, Scott Miller joining us. He's the national baseball columnist for Bleacher Report. Also does some work on Sirius XM, the MLB radio network, as the radio analyst there. And it's always good to talk to you. It's been way too long.
Yes, Andy, it has. Always enjoy talking baseball with you. Miss having you in San Diego, but boy, you're in a great city in Chicago.
Yeah, I think the party is still going on here, from what I can gather, as far as the Cubs winning the World Series last year. Let's start right there, as long as we're speaking about Chicago. You've been traveling around the Major League camps and whatnot throughout the Grapefruit League and also through the Cactus League. Is there anybody out there that's a serious contender to maybe knock the Cubs off this year?
You know, you always figure there are, you know, for a couple of reasons. One, you know, modern baseball, the playoff system where you've got multiple rounds of playoffs now, always seems to sap the pitching for the following season. And I don't think it's an accident that no team has repeated since the New York Yankees, 1998, 99, and 2000. Since then, we haven't seen anybody repeat. That's a long time. That said, the Cubs, to me, obviously have every weapon they you would want to have a great chance to repeat. I think you can arguably, they're better than they were last year. I mean, going into the year, their closer set with Wade Davis. Last year, of course, they had to make the deal at midseason for Chapman. They're going to have Schwarber for a full season. So, 103 wins last year. They can be better yet this year. That said, you know, Los Angeles, I think, is a team to watch. You know, the rotation still, under construction, and it's going to be all year. But you start with Clayton Kershaw. He's on the mound all year. They've got a lot of good things going on in Los Angeles right now. Corey Seager is going to win an MVP award one of these years soon, maybe even this year. A lot of depth, big time depth with that franchise. You know, Giants having signed Mark Melanson, I think that's going to help. I mean, I know Joe Maddon said several times, beginning last October and reiterating it this spring, that he was thrilled the Cubs came back and won Game 4 in the late innings of the playoff game against San Francisco, because even though Game 5 would have been in Chicago, he didn't want any part of that pitching with, you know, Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija and Madison Bumgarner. I like the Giants and the Dodgers in terms of being the teams with the most chance to knock off the Cubs, and probably the Mets, because, you know, we saw when their pitching was right 2 years ago what happened, and the Mets pitching looks like it's going to be right this year with even Zach Wheeler coming back.
All right, let's delve into the Cubs again real quick here, because you mentioned Kyle Schwarber, and obviously he was a piece that was missing all of last year, the regular season, basically three games in, didn't get a hit. And then came and did what he did in the World Series, which I'm still kind of scratching my head to figure out how he was able to not only make contact, but face major league pitching on the grandest stage of baseball. But, you know, this kid's now available for the year. And I know that there's going to be some questions posed to Joe Maddon about how are you going to divide the at-bats? How are you going to use everybody and make sure Javi Baez is around and make sure that Kyle Schwarber gets plenty of plate appearances as well?
Yeah, and you know what? And you know, Andy, as well as I do, Joe Maddon's answer to that is going to be, kind of blushing at the embarrassment of riches. And he'll say what other managers say when a question like that is posed. He'll say, well, that's a good problem to have. And you bet it is.
Amen to that.
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, it's amazing to me how often, usually over the course of 162 games, these kind of issues figure themselves out. And I think where you start when you talk about where are all the at-bats going to come from, I think you've got to start with center field and right field. Start with Jason Hayward. We all know he's revamped his swing over the winter. He moved to Arizona to be near the Cubs facility. So I think right there, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see right out of the gate, what does Jason Hayward do offensively? And the other question to me, of course, I know John Jay's there as insurance, but Albert Almora Jr. in center field, you know, can he take that job full time? Can he run with it? Now, if Hayward or Almora, either one of them stumbles, you know, then you're going to, you know, Joe Maddon's going to be, he'll probably find it easier to give people at bats because, you know, he'll have to bench Hayward some or Almora some, and then we'll get into what Maddon does so well, juggling players and giving everybody playing time. But, you know, if Almora and Hayward come out strong, then we get back to the good problem to have is where do you get everybody there at bats?
Yeah, and like you say, I mean, that's a tremendous issue and a tremendous problem to have if you're the manager of the Cubs at this point. You know, the loss of Dexter Fowler, I know that, you know, he signed with the St. Louis Cardinals, obviously the team's biggest rival. It's hard to kind of really put into words what he meant to this team over the last couple of years, and now that problem that you've just talked about that's created in center field.
Yeah, you know, you're right. So much of what we look at in baseball has to do with numbers and statistics. And, you know, I don't mean just from the analytical crowd either. I mean, you know, even guys that focus more on personalities and the human side of the game, like me, not that I don't look at numbers, but even coming at it from the human side, you still look at numbers, right? I mean, you look at on-base percentage, you look at batting average, you look at stolen base, you look at what a guy does on the field. And the thing with Dexter Fowler is he's the classic case to me, Andy, of a player that is worth far more than whatever the sum total of the numbers add up to. And, you know, I mean, he made that Cubs team go last year, and I still don't think, and I know I'm not alone, it was not an accident that the one slump the Cubs had last year, the one time they stumbled, was in those last 3 weeks or so before the All-Star break last year, and it coincided when Fowler was out with a strained hamstring. And a lot of people forget, because the Cubs, everything they touched turned to gold last year, but a lot of people forget that when they had that skid, when Fowler was out, they got into the All-Star break, and it was the San Francisco Giants that had the best record in the major leagues, not the Cubs, at the All-Star break. Granted, it's how you finish. It's not how you are, you know, where you are at the All-Star break. But I bring that up because, again, Fowler, that all happened when Fowler was missing. So, you know, I found it interesting this year when I stopped in Jupiter, Florida, that it was a different vibe with that Cardinals team. I mean, Dexter Fowler is funny. They played music while they warmed up and stretched, and that came straight ripped out of Joe Maddon's playbook from Dexter Fowler. He brought the music, and he brought some fun to the Cardinals. And you know, I had Stephen Piscotty and Michael Wacha tell me, and even Mike Matheny, that this is a much looser Cardinals group this spring. They're having some fun, more fun maybe than they've had. And, you know, there's no question a lot of it was Dexter Fowler's influence.
Staying in the city, let's go to the other side of town here real quick too, because they're trying something that the Cubs did and did successfully, and that's pretty much start over again. I mean, they kind of cleared the decks. They got rid of Chris Sale. They got rid of Adam Eaton. They got some interesting and intriguing prospects back, but what do you make of this the rehab project that is for the White Sox?
Yeah, you know, I found it interesting. I stopped in Glendale, Arizona this spring, had a long talk with you'll find this shocking, but a long talk with pitching coach Don Cooper. I know he doesn't say much.
He's at a loss for words all the time.
Yes. Well, anyway, I found it, you know, we're talking about this, and Don Cooper said, look, he said, I don't like to use the word rebuild. And not that he was shying away from what the White Sox are doing, but, you know, he made a good point. He said, I don't like to use the word rebuild because, in my view, you're always building. Even when you have a good team, you're building. It's a constant build. Granted, what the White Sox have, if you go along with Cooper and his words that I just repeated, they've got a little steeper build than some other teams do. But, you know, I get what he's saying. And it you know, it is a rebuild. There's no question. I think the most interesting part, the first half of the season, probably on the south side, is going to be when is the day that they're going to pull the trigger and trade Jose Quintana, and how much are they going to get back for him? The same thing with closer David Robertson. Same thing with third baseman Todd Frazier. Certainly, Rick Hahn and company really did well, I think, by all accounts around baseball in the Chris Sale and Adam Eaton trades. Although Lucas Giolito got knocked around a little bit this spring, and the bloom is a little bit off him as one of the top prospects in the game. But still, you know, that's what Don Cooper's there for, right? He's the pitching magician. He needs to get Giolito right. But Michael Kopech, I think, he's the real deal, and I like what the White Sox are doing. I think it was needed. As I say, I think the first half of the season, most interesting thing is going to be when they trade some of these guys. And then after that, the most interesting thing is going to be, you know, when they do really get down and dirty and serious with some of these prospects and begin to bring them up, whether it's September or whether it's early next season.
Talking some baseball with Scott Miller, the national baseball columnist for Bleacher Report, and sticking with the White Sox, a guy that we know very well from our times in San Diego, Rick Renteria, getting another chance to manage a big league baseball team. And I thought that he was the right guy to bring into this group because of the fact that they knew they were going to kind of strip it down and they were going to be a young team. And I don't think Rick got enough credit for what he did for the Cubs in 2014 and kind of getting them ready to the for the jump to 15 and to 16 under Joe Maddon. Do you think he can get these guys right here in Chicago on the south side?
Yeah, I think they got it right. And, you know, I think you know, the Cubs people will tell you, you know, I mean, you're right. Renteria's off in the, you know, he's the forgotten man now on the north side. But, you know, Cubs people, if they're being honest, and they are, if you ask them, and they'll tell you Renteria did help do exactly what you just said, Andy, and helped, you know, bring that Cubs team another few steps closer to where they got the last 2 years. And I you know, Renteria's really good with the young people. I just hope for his sake, because this is a really, really good baseball man and a really good man in general. So I just hope, I have no doubt he's going to be really good for these young White Sox prospects. I just hope that when the prospects grow a little bit and they are ready to win, that things break so that the White Sox and Renteria are a long-term relationship, and that Renteria is around to help bring them to the finish line of the rebuild.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, because he did, you know, obviously it was a situation for the Cubs that Joe Maddon fell in their laps. I mean, you really can't argue, especially now with history being what it is and knowing what we know, you really can't fault them. But again, it's a tough deal for, again, you know, full disclosure, you and I know him really well, and just he's such a great guy.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what it really, really reminds me of, Andy, and it reminds me of along about 1977, I think was the year in Detroit when the Tigers, the late former general manager Jim Campbell, made a move in June, mid or late June of that season to hire Sparky Anderson. And it reminds me of this whole thing reminds me of that. And I know a lot of people don't even remember that anymore. But the deal in Detroit was that year the Tigers had hired a longtime organizational man named Les Moss to manage the team. It was the very first chance he got to manage a major league team. He'd been a loyal soldier in Detroit, managed a bunch of minor league teams and affiliates. Finally, he got his big break. So the season starts and they're into June. And the Tigers were 27-26. They were one game over 500 even. And, you know, by all accounts, Les Moss was doing just fine. But the problem for Les Moss was the Reds had fired Sparky Anderson, and the Tigers saw a chance to get Sparky Anderson. And they decided, you know what, this guy's a special, special manager. If we don't move now, we're going to lose him. And so they fired Les Moss, despite the fact that everything I just said about him, and they hired Sparky Anderson. And that didn't work as quick as the Cubs hiring Joe Maddon to get to a World Series, although Sparky did win. It took him a few years. It took, you know, he had to bring along Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker and Lance Parrish and Kirk Gibson, but he did win the World Series in 84. So, you know, history proved certainly the Tigers' move was right with Sparky Anderson. But that I kind of put what happened with Rick Renteria in Chicago with the Cubs along with what happened way back with Les Moss in Detroit. I think it's just those are examples of this game can be so cruel at times, and guys that wait and wait and wait for their opportunity, even when they get it, you know, when a Joe Maddon or Sparky Anderson comes along, sometimes even if you didn't do anything at all to deserve to be fired, you get it anyway.
Yep, and that's exactly what happened. And again, like we said, the rest is history. Spending a few moments here with Scott Miller, national baseball columnist for Bleacher Report. Also, you can hear him on Sirius XM, the MLB Network Radio. He does some analysis for them as well and well-versed on all things Major League Baseball. So in that respect, what team do you think going into this 2017 season might be the most improved of all the ones that you have seen and some of the moves that they've made?
You know what? Most improved, that's always such a tough question. So thanks a lot for that.
No problem. But, I'm here for you.
You know, I'm going to go, you know, it's so hard to see, but, you know, I'm going to go with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And here's why. I think every single thing that could go wrong with them last year did, from A.J. Pollock getting, you know, hurting his elbow, season-ending injury essentially on the weekend before spring training, before opening day, Zach Greinke was a complete disappointment. Shelby Miller was even worse. I just think, you know, they went 69-93 last year, and I'm not saying the Diamondbacks in a division with the Dodgers and Giants are going to win the division, but I just find it hard to believe they're going to be as bad as, you know, a 93-loss team that they were last year. I think Zach Greinke is a solid pitcher. I think he'll, you know, I mean, he'll figure some things out. I think he's, you know, maybe not going to be as good ever again as he was in Los Angeles 2 years ago. But I think with Greinke, I think Shelby Miller maybe figure some things out. They've got Patrick Corbin. They've still got some solid, you know, young position players from David Peralta. Obviously, Paul Goldschmidt is a perennial MVP candidate. You know, David Peralta, AJ Pollock is back. So I'm going to go with the Diamondbacks as a surprise team. A lot of people were picking the Rockies, Bud Black's team. I mean, they hired Bud because they, you know, and signed Ian Desmond because they thought they were about ready to win. But then Desmond broke his hand and hit by a pitch. He won't be back until early May, probably. And, you know, Rockies have that great lineup that's going to score a bunch of, you know, put a bunch of crooked numbers up there on the board. But, you know, they're still a little thin in the pitching department. So, I'm going to go Diamondbacks for the most improved. And then what? The biggest fall, did you ask me?
Well, I didn't, but you can go for it, sure. I like how you think. You know, your mind is like a continuous stream like mine is, so just keep going with it.
biggest fall, I'm going to go Texas Rangers. I really respect what they've done for the past several years. You know, obviously two World Series appearances a few years back. Last year won another division title, 95-67. The issues I've got with Texas are these. Like some of our friends in the analytics community, I'm paying attention to the fact that last year the Rangers went 36-11 in one-run games, which suggests regression this year. The other thing that suggests regression to me, despite Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish being atop the rotation, is the fact that they went out and they got Andrew Cashner and Tyson Ross, two former Padres that helped drag the Padres down into the Rangers rotation. And neither one are dependable. Tyson maybe a little more so, but Andrew Cashner, the former Cub, I just don't think he wants to play very much. Every time he gets an ache or a pain, he goes to the disabled list. And you cannot keep him off that disabled list.
Interesting picks. Yeah, I kind of agree with you a little bit on the Rangers, although I still see them maybe being a little bit of a force in the West. So since we're going to kind of break down to the divisions here real quick too, I mean, let's start in the American League since we're talking about the West. As I was looking at things, I thought that the Astros were probably the cream of the crop in that division. What do you think?
I do, you know, and it's going to be about pitching. I love the moves they made bringing in veterans with playoff experience, like Carlos Beltran and Josh Reddick and Brian McCann. I love supplementing all that great young talent they have, like Carlos Correa and George Springer and on and on and on with those guys. Key for Houston to me, you know, as so much of this game does, it comes down to pitching. And where the Astros are concerned, Dallas Keuchel, he won the Cy Young 2 years ago, went in the tank last year. Which Dallas Keuchel are we going to get? Lance McCullers Jr., I think, is going to be a key. Colin McHugh. They're a little bit thin on pitching, but I think they're going to get somebody. They'll add to some pitching, and I like the Astros a lot. Seattle Mariners will be interesting as well. I can't wait to watch that outfield. It's a no-name outfield. You know, general manager Jerry DePoto, he's always up to something. Jared Dyson, Leonis Martin, and Mitch Haniger. Basically, the point is, go out and get three center field types, see if they can cover every blade of grass in the outfield, and go get them. And I know Felix Hernandez and James Paxton and company are going to be thrilled with that. We'll see how the rest of the team does.
All right, let's move through the rest of the divisions here real quick. Let's go to the American League East while we're talking about it. You know, we mentioned the Blue Jays a little bit ago, but to me it still seems like this is the Red Sox division to win.
No question. I'm on the same page as you there. Chris Sale, I think, is really going to make that rotation tough. And, you know, Rick Porcello won the Cy Young Award last year. The one question mark, of course, is David Price's elbow and how that might affect the depth of the rotation. But that outfield, Benintendi and Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr., it looks like we're going to get the skinny Pablo Sandoval this year, which will be good for Boston. I think no question that's the class of the division. The analytics guys like Baseball Prospectus, you know, they don't like the Orioles much. They pick them last, but I've got them a lot higher. Buck Showalter, he pulls rabbits out of his hat every night on that pitching staff. I think the Orioles are going to be pretty good. I think Toronto losing Edwin Encarnacion free agency, that's a big bat to take out of that lineup for me. I know they've got some young pitchers who are exciting, like Marco Estrada and Marcus Stroman, but I don't see it with the Blue Jays this year.
Let's go to the Central, and I don't think the Indians winning last year is going to be much of a fluke. I think they're gonna take that division, and they may get challenged a little bit. But I see the Indians. How about you?
Yeah, I do too. The Tigers could challenge them, but the Tigers need a lot to go right. And already, JD Martinez is going to open the season on the disabled list. He's got a sore foot. You know, Justin Verlander, he's got to get some help from Jordan Zimmermann. And you know, we'll see what the rookie last year, Michael Fulmer, does in his second year. But the Indians are so good. I mentioned Edwin Encarnacion's a tough bat to lose for the Blue Jays. Well, the rich get richer in the Central. I mean, the Indians, they've got great pitching. We know that. They got Kluber, they got Carrasco, they got Salazar, Trevor Bauer. And now they add Edwin Encarnacion. And, you know, there's some hope there in Goodyear this spring that Michael Brantley's going to be better and be able to play this year. They missed him almost all last year. And as Terry Francona said, you know, I don't know too many teams that added a number three and a number four hitter, which is what will happen if Brantley comes back to play with Encarnacion.
Let's go to the National League. Let's start in the Central. And I still think this is the Cubs division to win.
No question. I mean, they won it by 17 and a half games last year over the Cardinals. I don't see anybody in the division that has improved enough to make up a 17 and a half game deficit to the Cubs. Plus, as we just discussed, I think the Cubs arguably are better this year. I think it's going to be another blowout in the division for the Cubs.
All right, in the East, who do you like in the National League East?
You know, I mentioned a little bit ago, Andy, about the Mets and their pitching and Noah Syndergaard, of course. And now it looks like this year, Jacob DeGrom and Matt Harvey are going to be healthy. They're getting Zach Wheeler back. I'm going to take them over the Nationals. I know the Nationals get a lot of love nationally. I don't like the makeup of the Nationals. Steven Strasburg is going to be back on the disabled list. He is every single year. You know, he's like Lucy pulling the football away from Charlie Brown. Every year, you know, people say maybe this is the year he's going to throw 200 innings or win a Cy Young, and he's going to, you know, you know, whatever you want to call it, bad luck or extra caution that he and the Nationals always take. I don't think Strasburg's been built up through his career to be that tough stud pitcher that Max Scherzer is, and you know, Bryce Harper, I think, is going to come back this year. That guy's too good. I can see another MVP year out of him. But, you know, Trey Turner at short's going to be bad. You know, that's going to be good. But I just – the Nationals, there are a lot of Scott Boras clients on that team, and it's a weird mix of people. And they also looks like they're going to go, what, Blake Treinen as closer?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think that bullpen, Dusty Baker's going to end up pulling out some of the little hair he has left. Trying to maneuver that bullpen. I like the Mets in that division.
And out to the West, there's a lot of folks picking the Giants, a lot of folks picking the Dodgers.
Yeah, you know, I think more people are picking the Dodgers, which is why the contrarian that I am, I'm leaning Giants. As we talked about, I think their bullpen issues, I think, are going to be better this year, although, you know, they – nothing's perfect, and Will Smith, the lefty they acquired from Milwaukee last year, looks like he may need Tommy John surgery and probably going to miss the year, so that takes a lefty away from the Giants. But still, Mark Melanson in the back end of that bullpen I think is going to be good. And, you know, Bumgarner, Johnny Cueto, Matt Moore, who everybody seems to forget about. But Moore's, you know, they acquired him, the lefty from Tampa Bay last July. You know, you slide him in behind Bumgarner and Cueto and in front of Jeff Samardzija. That's a pretty formidable rotation. You know, I think the Giants are really good. It won't stun me if the Dodgers win the division. I think the two of them are probably the class of the division. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, I would look for improvement from the Diamondbacks. And then, you know, unfortunately for Bud Black and then, of course, the Padres. I think for the Rockies and Padres, it's going to be hang with them.
All right, what's your World Series matchup and who wins it?
How about we go the Cleveland Indians. We're into ending droughts, right?
Yes.
Cubs last year, 04, the last 12 or 13 years, the Red Sox curse ended, the White Sox ended their, you know, 80-some year run. I really think the Indians have what it takes. I've got them over the Giants. No disrespect to the Cubs. Again, the only reason I'm not picking the Cubs, I easily could. It'd almost be too easy to have the Cubs win it all, but like I said, I just go back to how difficult it is to repeat. Something always seems to go wrong. As I mentioned, the last team to repeat is World Series winners. You got to go back to the Yankees between 98 and 2000. That's a lot of history. Now, the Cubs last year did a really nice job of rewriting history. Maybe they do it again this year. If they do, it won't surprise me. As I say, they run away with the division, and they very well could go back-to-back. I've got the Indians over the Giants, though, simply because out of respect for how hard it is to repeat these days in baseball.
Scott Miller, the national baseball columnist for the Bleacher Report, joining us here on Mazur's Musings, the podcast. And, Scott, I want to touch, too, before we let you go here. You had a great opportunity to speak to Commissioner Rob Manfred. You got a one-on-one audience with him. And I'm curious what you learned about him from that little discussion you had.
You know, I really like Commissioner Manfred. I know the jury's still out. It's going to be out. It should be out because he's only entering his third year as commissioner. And I know he hinted a couple years back about outlawing the shift, and that made people go nuts, especially the analytics community. And that's fine. You know, we all have our passions. You know, this year I'm not overly thrilled with eliminating the four pitch intentional walk and just going to a signal. You know, I think that's more symbolic than anything. But what I do like about Commissioner Manfred, a couple things, and this is where I think he's going to succeed. I think he gets it that baseball has to make sure they draw in the younger generation. You know, he inherited a sport that's really healthy. I mean, more than $10 billion in revenues last year. The Cubs winning the World Series, that Cubs-Indians, that was the highest-rated World Series on television in 25 years. So there's a lot going on. But he Manfred knows he's got to hook the younger generation and make sure that in this ever-rapidly fast-paced world that, you know, baseball's got a lot of dead time, and they need to make sure that to capture the younger viewers. Within that, he's trying to eliminate all the dead time, and I think I'm all for that. I mean, what I learned from Manfred, you know, we hear so much about baseball being 3 hours, and he's kind of changed his view. A couple years ago, he made some moves to try to get the average time of game, to less than 3 hours. Well, where he's at now, and I completely agree, is to him, talking with him, he doesn't care if it's a 2-hour and 45-minute game or if it's a game that goes 3:30. His thing is, however long the game goes, we've got to eliminate the dead time. And if there's a 12 to 11 game that goes 3.5 hours, that's great if there's a lot of action. I would love to see him, you know, really enforce that pitch clock. Too many relievers especially are taking way too much time in between pitches. And when you're throwing one pitch every 50 or 60 seconds, that's a problem. And, you know, we saw last year, one last thing, one statistics that really stood out last year in baseball, 30.2% of the at-bats last year ended with either a strikeout or a walk or a hit batter. So in other words, nearly a third of the time, a batter's going to the plate and not putting the ball in play. And I do think that is an issue that Manfred and his people have to keep watching, because I don't know about you, Andy, but I do know one thing I loved about baseball as a kid was, you saw so many rallies. I don't think you see as many. I'd have to do some studies on this, but to me today, the rally is the 2 or 3 run homer, and that's it. The rallies where you string 4, 5, 6 hits together, I think anecdotally, those are way down compared to where they used to be.
The thing that I enjoyed about your chat with him too was the talk about the extra inning rule that's going to go into effect in the very low rungs of the minor league system this year, and was experimented with in the WBC as well. And that's putting a runner at second base to start the innings in extra innings. And to me, and you're a hockey guy as well, I mean, I can't stand the regular season when, you know, if it's a tie, it's a tie. You know, if you play the overtime and you don't get anything settled, to me, shootout is just like saying, okay, let's play home run derby after 10 innings. You know, I mean, it just doesn't seem like it's the natural inclination of the game itself. And I kind of gathered, and please tell me if this is the route you took as well, or the thought you had out of it, was that it's going to stay at the minor league level just to see, and it never really has intentions of getting to the big leagues.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think, put it this way, you know, I know when I asked Manfred that question, you know, he said, this thing has gotten a ton of traction because, you know, everybody thinks, freaks out and says, oh my God, there's going to be this major change in baseball. And yeah, what they're looking at, you know, he wants to play around a little bit at the lower levels of the minor leagues. And he makes perfect sense, again, to me. You know, to his point, you know, rookie ball, Class A level, those are developmental leagues. And his point is, you know, most of the time those games are played in Florida or somewhere in the country in the middle of summer when it's really hot. Not many people are in the stands at those rookie league games and Class A games, you know, maybe a few hundred at the most. It's really hot. Not many people are there. What good is it to play 18 innings at that level and end the game where you're out of pitchers and you got to have your shortstop pitch? He said, you know, those are developmental leagues, and that does nothing for development. So, you know, he's looking to experiment down there, put the runner on second base, whatever, to begin the 12th inning, or, you know, and then maybe somebody wins it in 12 or 13 and they don't go 18. That all makes really good sense to me. Again, talking about the developmental leagues. Now, he said, I don't see that ever coming to the major leagues. The only way I would see that is if, for whatever reason, all of a sudden, it became wildly popular in the minor leagues, this concept. And at the same time, major leagues were slumping. You know, maybe attendance is declining or the younger people growing up don't flock to the game. But if that were ever to happen, I think that's going to be years from now. That's not going to be in the next 3 years during Manfred's tenure as commissioner.
Will we see a DH in the NL under his leadership?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know that we will. He's got some issues with the players' union on a number of things. But, you know, I mean, I can see this. I mean, there was so much talk about the low, you know, strike early this spring that Tony Clark and the players' union wouldn't sign off on. You know, Manfred's idea to raise the strike zone just a little bit from below the knee to the top of the knee. In the players' union, so far, that's a no-go. I mean, I could see next offseason or 2 off-seasons from now, you know, again, talking about how much action there is in a game and if there's still a lot of dead time, I could see a trade-off. I don't think there'll be a DH in the National League with Manfred, but I could see him going to the players' union. I could see there being some kind of a negotiation like, look, give us raising the strike zone so we can get more balls put in play, and you know, we'll give you a designated hitter in the National League, which will create more jobs for hitters. I could see maybe something like that happening. That's, by the way, my own speculation. That is not even from even an off-the-record conversation I had with Manfred when we talked. We did not talk about that. That's just me thinking out loud.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And it's so hard to explain to fans of strictly the American League about the beauty of the National League game. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, it's late inning use of bullpen. It's early use of a starting pitcher who's getting lit up. And these fans come back to me and say, yeah, I really pay my money to go to a ballpark to watch a double switch. But that's an oversimplification to me of the situation. I mean, there's some strategy and there's a little bit of the nuance and the balance between what the home manager does as opposed to how that reacts to the visiting manager.
Yeah, no question, and I agree. I mean, I think it would be a sad day if the designated hitter was ever put in the National League simply because of all the strategy that we would lose. And you know, I know in the American League, it's not like there's no strategy. I mean, again, you go back to Baltimore and you watch the way Buck Showalter works his pitchers. You know, he is not sitting back in the dugout, not doing anything, you know, just waiting for the 3-run homer. I mean, you know, there's maneuvering in the American League too, but it's different in the National League. And I think a lot of people would hate to see it if the designated hitter went in there. But, you know, again, I would tie it back to that stat that I mentioned to you a little bit ago from last year, that nearly a third of the at-bats last year ended without the ball being put in play. I will say this, as Manfred looks to make sure there's less dead time and more action in games, I think that's a number to watch. If that number trends upward this year, or if it stays stagnant and it doesn't start to go the other way, you know, a third of the at-bats not putting the ball in play, I think if that's the number to watch and that's the number that eventually could lead to the designated hitter in the National League.
Scott Miller, national baseball columnist for the Bleacher Report, kind enough to join us. I could talk to you for 6 more hours about all this stuff, but I know you have things to do. But before we officially let you go, I don't know how many folks out there realize what a huge music guy you are. And I saw some of your Twitter. Did you see? You saw Jimmy Buffett earlier this spring. Is that true?
No, you know, it's close. I wish, you know, Jimmy Buffett, he and the Coral Reefer Band are playing in Las Vegas Saturday night.
Gotcha.
Their first show of the spring summer season. What happened, that Jimmy Buffett tweet you saw from me the other day, just a week ago at the very last minute, they made a surprise announcement that Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band were playing in Solana Beach, California at the Belly Up Tavern this past Tuesday evening, two nights ago. So that place is like a 600 or 700 seat. You know, you don't even have seats. There are a few seats, but you stand. It's a small, small club, and it's only about 20 minutes from my house. And I would have given just about anything to be there. The problem is I was in Arizona working when tickets went on sale. Yes, a friend of mine texted me from San Diego the day the tickets went on sale. He texted about 1 in the afternoon. I'm over in Arizona, and he says, doggone. He said, they just announced Buffett is playing the Belly Up, and the tickets were going on sale at noon. He said, I was online at noon waiting, and I still got shut out. Oh. It turns out 600 tickets were gone, they say, in less than a minute. All kinds of people got shut out. So, yeah, I've seen Jimmy about 15 or 16 times. It's always a blast. I would have loved to seen him in the small club. I wish you were accurate on that one, but I was not there. But I was in Australia with my wife in January and February, and I did. Part of that was timed because it was one time of the year I could go, right, between spring training and the season. But it was also time because we have friends there and Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band were playing there. So I caught 3 Springsteen shows in Australia, 1 in Melbourne, 2 in Sydney. So that was great. And you're right. Anytime I can go to a concert, I've got a varied interest, love all kinds of music. You know, Springsteen, I always tell people, my wife gets on me, and, you know, I tell people, Springsteen's my Sunday morning church service. Buffett's my Saturday morning cartoons, and anybody in between. I was sorry to miss the drive-by truckers in October while I was out at the playoffs, but I have seen them about 4 times. They're one of my favorite independent bands. Alabama Shakes, any number of people. You're right on the music. We could talk music for another 3 hours.
You're right. And you know what, folks? This is seriously, I mean, when you follow a baseball team or you follow baseball itself and you're traveling, and Scott does his fair share of traveling and a lot of it on the West Coast too, but you've got to have something else in your life or you're going to go nuts just covering baseball.
Yeah, in the traveling, you know, I always keep an eye on the concert schedules in whatever cities I'm in, and usually I'm at the ballpark at night, but you know, every now and then the stars line up. I remember a couple of years ago, I had to go into Kansas City for a story I was working on like two summers ago. I was there over a weekend and I looked and I see Jimmy Buffett, speaking of him, he and the Coral Reefer Band playing in Kansas City that Saturday night. And I looked, I said, doggone it. The Royals are playing the Rangers Saturday night. And then I double checked and doggone, it was my lucky day. They moved it to a 1 o'clock game for TV. So, you know, I was able to work the game and then I went and saw Buffett in Kansas City that night. Years ago, I was in Detroit working. Same thing. It was like a Saturday and it was a day game and Elton John was playing at the Palace of Auburn Hills. I was able to catch that show. And, a couple years during one of the San Francisco runs to the World Series, I was there for practically the whole month during the playoffs and World Series. And at one playoff series had ended, and before the next one began, at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco, which is a small, great little club there, a British guy named Nick Lowe was playing. And I was all over that. I went and saw Nick Lowe. Nick Lowe, if anybody remembers, he had one top 40 hit. You got it, my friend. He also wrote, one of my all-time favorite songs that most people associate it with Elvis Costello, but Nick Lowe wrote the song, and that is What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. And he played that night in San Francisco. So, it's always, you're right. You know, it's a nice outlet, music is, and especially if you happen to be in some city where you're a rare night, you're not at the ballpark. It's always fun to see who's in town and maybe try to catch a show.
Okay, you know, it's hysterical you brought up Nick Lowe and the fact that what's so funny about Peace, Love, and Understanding, because Springsteen does that every once in a while in a concert too. But Nick Lowe actually opened up the first concert I ever saw in my entire life was in 1982. And then it was called the Rosemont Horizon in Rosemont, Illinois. It's now called the Allstate Arena. He opened up for the Cars on the Shake It Up tour in 1982. And that was the first concert I ever saw.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No kidding. That's awesome. Yeah, Nick Lowe. So we've got that in common. We got a lot in common already, but we got Nick Lowe in common as well. So, that's some good stuff right there. Nick Lowe is terrific. And, you know, also, you know, I always tell people, I know I'm sure you know this, and people in Chicago, many of them do know this, but, you know, the song the Cubs have blasted for years, Go Cubs Go.
Mm-hmm.
Written by the late, great Chicago songwriter Steve Goodman.
Yeah, and he went to my high school. He was a graduate of Maine East High School, well before I got there. But he was. It all kind of comes full circle. And he wrote songs.
Yeah.
He wrote songs for Arlo Guthrie and many of these great folk singers.
Yeah, of course, one of his best known hits. His best known song, I think, is City of New Orleans. That's what Arlo Guthrie made big. You know, Good Morning America, how are you? Don't you know me? I'm your native son. And that's a Steve Goodman tune. And he wrote one of my favorite Jimmy Buffett songs is Banana Republics. And Steve Goodman wrote that. You know, he was tight back in the 70s before he passed away with Buffett. And, you know, there's some real good stuff there, too. In fact, I'm told Go Cubs Go was written, I think WGN requested it, or if I'm not mistaken.
WGN Radio, yeah.
Because he had written a dying Cubs fan's last request, which is another great baseball song, but it's such a downer, as you might guess from the title. So somebody in Chicago, I think it was WGN, if I'm not mistaken, asked him if he'd consider writing another baseball song that was a little more uplifting, and thus Go Cubs Go.
And thus we have an anthem here in Chicago that's played every time after the Cubs win a game at Wrigley Field. It used to be played right before the top of the first inning at Wrigley Field back when he wrote it back in 84, I believe it came out.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Which was another really good year in Cubs history, at least, blown away by last year, of course, but still.
Absolutely. Scott, again, I could talk to you for another 6, 7, 8 hours just about all the music stuff too, but I know you have a life and want to let you get going here and get ready for the 2017 baseball season too.
Well, Andy, I look forward to seeing you somewhere at a ballpark this summer. I miss you in San Diego, my friend. I know you're in a great city there in Chicago, and always a pleasure talking baseball and music with you.
Love to do it. Scott Miller, national baseball columnist for the Bleacher Report. You can also hear him every once in a while on SiriusXM, MLB Network Radio, as one of their analysts. Great to have him along, and we'll continue along the road here on Mazer's Musings, the podcast, in just a minute.
I got the drinks right now. Theo said I got one round. No, actually, I had thought about that, so one round's on me, please. That's a shot and a beer. That's the Hazleton way.
This is Mazer's Musings, the podcast.
And welcome back to Mazer's Musings, the podcast. We certainly appreciate Scott Miller joining us. If you couldn't tell, we probably could have spent the next 12 hours talking not only about baseball, but about music. And that's so important. Seriously, when you're covering a team, you got to have some outside interest or you're going to go absolutely nuts. But again, big thanks to Scott for his insight and knowledge, even though he didn't pick the Cubs to repeat. Hey, he's got his thoughts, and that's why they play the games eventually here with 162 of them determine who's going to win all these divisions. But hopefully that gave you a good insight as to what things are being looked at as far as nationally and all that from Scott from the Bleacher Report. And we'll hopefully get him on again coming up soon here during the season once it gets started. So it all gets underway for real on Sunday. The Cubs will open things up against the St. Louis Cardinals in St. Louis, the home opener coming up here on April 10th. And again, we'll hope to do these a little bit more regularly and get some more interesting guests on and just give you some of my takes on things as this baseball season rolls on. So until next time, again, thanks for tuning in. And again, don't forget to subscribe to Mazer's Musings, the podcast. You can do that at iTunes. And you can also catch the episodes on my website, which is andy-maser.com, andy-maser.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. I am at andy_maser1 on Twitter. And I do have my own professional Facebook page, too, in case you want to jump on that as well. It is Andy Maser Broadcaster, all one word, if you go onto Facebook. And you can like that page and keep up to date on what's going on with me. And if I have updates to the podcast as well. So again, thanks for tuning in and thanks for subscribing in advance. And we will talk to you next time here on Mazer's Musings, the podcast.
You've been listening to Mazer's Musings, the podcast. Join us next week for an all-new episode.
Please hang up and try again.